Welcome to a Prevent Connect audio conference recording. The following was recorded on May 22nd at a Call to Men's 2009 Annual National Conference in New York City, New York. To learn more about A Call to Men, visit their website at www.acalltomen.org.
One of the hallmarks of A Call to Men is really getting outside of the box. And as part of that, we have made a true journey into incorporating the arts in our efforts to end violence in the lives of women and children. And so to that end, I'd like to introduce our next performer, who is yet another acclaimed performer around the country. Some of you may have seen her when she comes up. I think that you'll be like, we'll hear those ohs in the audience. But Vanessa Williams is a member of A Call to Men's board of directors and has been a tremendous supporter and just a star in our book. So I'd like to welcome Vanessa up to the stage this morning.
Absorb all of what we just heard from Eve. You know, I'm really extremely grateful that I'm an artist, and I stand with Eve and all of you here in my capacity as an artist to really get people to feel what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes. And I'm just really grateful that over the past 5 or 6 years, during that 10-year period, that the Vagina Monologues has been sort of a staple of the artistic world, that I've gotten to perform it with amazing cast of women. And this year, I wish Eve was here to hear that, but this year I got to direct it with a cast of amazing women, two of which were my soul food sisters, and Terry Vaughn, and just a number of women. So I'm just really just moved, because this place has really been sanctified by all the stuff that's gone on in the last 24 hours. And I'm really humbled and honored to be here and stand before you. I'm impressed, I'm inspired, because I've been educated and uplifted. My heart, my open heart has been opened even wider by all of you, people who've spoken, Joe Ehrman and Paul Kiffel and Eve today. And Paul was, you know, he had me at acknowledgments when he, you know, was acknowledging Mother Earth and nature that supports us, and the Native Americans who so willingly shared this land with the settlers who came here and then, you know, toss them aside, and the women's movement and the shoulders that we stand upon and the clothing, the people who made the clothing that we wear, who are mostly brown, underpaid women, and the people who clean this building, and all of those who make it possible for us to live these convenient lives that we have. And I'd also like to add to those acknowledgments my own mother, who pushed me out into this amazing, glorious world and then left it way too soon. And all of the women who have mothered me. And my God, I want to thank and honor all of you here who are in the trenches and on the front lines, saving lives and literally changing the world with the work that you do. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your tenacious commitment in the face of all this opposition. And I just, again, am humbled and honored to be in your presence and share this sacred space with such awesome, evolved individuals as yourselves. And since I never attended any kind of event like this, I wasn't quite sure what my voice was going to add to it, you know, for the folks like yourselves who work in this field every day. And after Eve Ensler, thank you, Ted. You know, you guys are out there on the daily hearing those atrocious stories and just working to end violence towards women and girls. It's almost like, you know, you asked me to sing, right? But you guys are the ones who composed the song and wrote the lyrics, and I showed up this morning with my little sheet music, and I don't really read that well. But okay, yeah, it's a man's world, right? And I grew up in a house full of them. I had three brothers, my two uncles, my nana, and me. And I learned about male privilege and gender inequality in the house where I grew up from the people who loved me most. I learned really early on that, as most girls do, that boys are more important than girls. And though everything in my body screamed at the insanity of this injustice, this untruth, I did what the good girls do. I behaved and did what I was told. And so at 15, I was regularly cooking the dinners while my brothers played stickball outside with their friends. And in a rickety shopping cart, I dragged what I could of all the household laundry down those bedside streets where I grew up, a block and a half over to the wash-o-mat, while my brother dropped off additional load after load of their dirty underwear and smelly socks and went to play basketball with the other boys. See, if I were a boy, when it was time to get new sneakers on our family's annual back-to-school shopping excursions, I would have deserved to get the pro kids just like them, right? You know, because I was a boy and I had to look right and be properly equipped for all the sports I'd be playing. And I wouldn't have had to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous name calling because as a girl, I had to wear the rejects. So yes, the message was loud and clear and consistent. Girls don't get the same liberties as boys. Girls are required to take care of them. It's a man's world, and I had to fall in line. And I did not like that at all. I didn't. It wasn't fair. And so my nana, in trying to protect me and keep me safe from all the men in the world, had a really funny way of doing it. Maybe it was out of her own guilt because she hadn't been able to save my auntie from the sexual abuse of one of her gentlemen callers, who was not one. And because she believed, like many others, that the best way to protect a girl or a woman is to monitor and limit her movements, control where she goes, what she wears, who she's around. She had every good intention, my grandmother, and I am thankful, truly, truly thankful, that her love and concern about her love and concern for me, but I'm a little girl, 8 years old, and she put the onus on me, which I learned later when I studied Erickson's psychology in college, that I was just behaving as a normal developing child, seeking attention and approval, because my daddy was not in the house. He was not there to give it to me. So I turned to the only men I knew, my mother's brothers, my uncles. And so when their friends came over, I sat with them in the living room, talking and laughing and listening to music, and okay, yes, wanting them to think I was a pretty little girl, smart and funny. To which my nana quickly reacted, calling me to get up out of there in a hurry. Oh man, she came down on me hard, accusing me of some infraction I knew not of, telling me I was acting fast and grown and womanish. making me believe I had done something wrong. No, actually that I was wrong. Yeah, I was wrong. I was a girl in a room full of men where anything could happen, and often anything did. But I didn't know that. I was innocent and naive, confused, and I wondered why. It scared me, her reaction, and it really hurt my feelings because I had no idea what I'd done, why I couldn't be trusted. If I were parenting myself in that situation right now, I would know to make that little girl, my daughter, feel safe and empowered and nurtured. That if anything, a conversation with those young men was what needed to take place. That they were the ones who needed to be reminded that a girl child should be safe in their midst. Safe wherever she is, because she is valued and cherished and respected like all women. Like it once was on this planet, when the goddess was revered and feminine spirit celebrated, before women were raped and murdered and burned for being wise and seen as a threat to masculinity and male dominance. Well, that situation never turned out, or never turned into what my grandmother feared and what I didn't even know to be afraid of. And let me tell you, I'm so very grateful, because too many women that I know and that I love were not so lucky when it came to being alone in a room with their uncles. But still, I was confused about my part in what my Nana was accusing me of. And, you know, if in fact one of those young men had violated me, I'm pretty sure that I would have been blamed. So, okay, I got it now. Men are most important. They're to be served by women. And don't trust them. These are the beliefs and the messages that I'm sent off into the world with. It don't seem right, doesn't seem fair, and the voice of my authentic self is still screaming in my ear, mad and dissatisfied about it. And then it's no wonder that when I grew into an adult and began navigating the deep and precarious waters of dating and relationship, I often found myself in a tug of war with men over who would control my life. And so when that spring morning back in the 90s, I stood in front of my favorite childhood destinations, one of my favorite childhood destinations, where every year from the time I was about 8 years old, I waited with the glee of Tiny Tim and Charlie Brown in the rain, sleet, or snow with the other diehard New Yorkers for that first miracle of the Christmas season, the lighting of the tree at Rockefeller Center, with my boyfriend who was with me, a good guy, a man I've been dating for over 2 years, who until that moment never gave any indication of a violent streak. In the throes of a heated conversation, he put his hands on my face and mushed me backwards. Okay. I didn't realize then how dangerous the situation had become, that I couldn't have a fight with a man, as some of my girlfriends used to talk about having with their guys, because no, my physical strength was no match for his. And nor did I realize how lucky I was that he hadn't used his fist, because I would have been down and out for the count. I would have been like those other women, those battered women that are the subject of movies and movies of the week and nightly TV reports. No, I instantly told myself, no, this is not that. See, because as soon as it happened, I started minimizing it and rationalizing it in my mind that he didn't really hit me. It wasn't really a slap. It was an open hand. It was a mush. And he had never done anything like this before, not even remotely. He was a good guy, a well-meaning man. Yeah, who would never strike a woman until he did. See, like A Call to Men says, the good guys and the bad guys have more in common than they have different. And while the good guys draw a line at physical violence and sexual violence or what they know is illegal, there's this whole gray area where abuse happens. The good guys and the bad guys share a belief system, a socialization. And like that guy who said on the tape yesterday, he was trained. There's a training that is the very foundation that supports the manifestation of sexism and men's violence against women. And I saw him as a good guy too, who just made a mistake. But now I know it was extreme, it was major, that it was in fact a power and control issue. His over mine, over me. Our disagreement had escalated to the point where he could no longer take it, where he found it necessary to adjust me, to put his hands on me. And just like in those early lessons, because I was a girl and now a woman, I didn't have a right to my thoughts, to my own thoughts, and to express them any way I wanted to. Or if I did, there was a limit, and he let me know when he got to it, when his hand connected with my face. You know, but I didn't have any idea that my boyfriend was dealing with living, with the demands of living in what A Call to Men describes as that socially prescribed man box, right? This narrow set of behaviors, all you men are demanded to adhere to live by, and navigate your entire emotional lives in. This set of rules dictated that he had to use all his might to control me. Okay, so as it turned out, that was the only time that he got physical with me, right? But our relationship was defined by power struggle and his desire to contain me. And just like my boyfriend, I was socialized in this patriarchal society, in this society of male domination. So you tell me, was he a bad guy or a well-meaning man? It's close, right? Okay, now, I'm not really sure, because I'm not certain, but I think my father beat my mother. It was never spoken about, but it was just kind of referred to, a feeling that I have, a faint memory, an image that surfaces sometimes clear, other times really murky, hard to make out. And from the not-so-veiled message I got from my grandmother, who loathed my father and thought he was no good, she didn't approve of his presence in our lives. Never mind that I loved him, no matter. And even without concrete evidence, I'm pretty sure it stands to reason he was likely abusive. Though when I asked him as an adult, he denied it. Still, something in me tells me it's true. And maybe I've just forgotten to protect myself. In the only clear memory that I have of us living together as a family, my daddy spanks me. My older brother and I were arguing over the TV. Stevie wanted to watch The Lone Ranger, and I wanted Little Rascals. And I don't know why my father called me over to him and not my brother or the both of us. I mean, both of us were arguing and making noise, but I didn't even think to ask that at the time. I just made my way over to him, over to the bedside where he sat upright with a stern face and a belt in his hand and told me to stick out mine. My mother lay in the bed next to him, helpless and unable to defend me. And I didn't know for sure what that look in her face meant, but I got it that she was as scared as I was. I remember slowly uncurling my little clenched fist and submitting to his punishment. He hit me maybe 3 times, and tears streamed down my face and burned tracks into my cheeks. I was maybe 4 years old at most, and that's what I got. That was the gift of living with my dad, growing up with a dad in the house. The next thing I remember was my Nana coming to the rescue to move us out of there. That's what it felt like, the great escape. But I never got a chance to ask my mother about any of the details of her relationship with my dad before she died. But in doing my own math and figuring out my own puzzle, my own self-inventory, you know, I started putting it together and thinking about my past. And I do clearly remember my dad being persona non grata at my mother's funeral And later, when all the neighbors and people came to grieve with us at the house, he was damn near airlifted out of there by my uncles. And though my mother actually died of complications from a bone marrow transfusion in her bout with leukemia, I always got the sense that my grandmother held that my mother died at the hands of my father's abuse, emotional and physical. I was only 10 years old, and though I really, really wanted to know about things like this, it just wasn't the kind of information that the grown folks thought appropriate to share with a kid. Yeah, my daddy was like the boogeyman in my grandmother's house. And when I really misbehaved, my nana wanted to straighten me out, she'd say really quick, "I'm gonna send you to go live with your father." And it was real and very, very scary. And without even knowing the details of what would actually happen if I lived there, I didn't want to find out. Because whatever the reason, I somehow knew that it was not going to be safe to live with him. And so the cycle continues. So what is the statistic? Every 12 seconds, a woman is beaten by a man she knows, a man she loves, a man she trusts. So my father and you whole, this whole society of manhood, the culture of manhood, passes on the message of male dominance over women to all the boys and to my father's youngest son and my half-brother, who as we speak awaits trial in New Jersey, facing charges for having beaten up his pregnant girlfriend. And although, like many other 20-year-old inner-city young men, there are a myriad of reasons, lack of education, employment, motivation, and on and on and on and on about why my brother took out his frustrations on Anika, not her real name, I know now that his quote-unquote pathology, as some call it, is selective to women. And that he is supported by a whole system and a whole set of male bystanders, including my dad, who say it's okay to hit his woman. She got out of line, she had it coming. And with all those things going on in his life, he's still acting out a choice rooted in this patriarchy. See, this is the thing about A Call to Men's message that really landed for me. Because, see, I'm the kind of person who really likes to get, you know, people's backstory and understand why they do the things that they do. I'm an actress, you know, I'm trying to break down the character, right? But I really got it that my brother and other men who abuse, and maybe they did need more hugs in their life. Maybe all of that. But they have a support group of well-meaning men who sanction and say with their silence that it's okay to beat your girl. And that is none of my business. Well, it is your business. It's all of our business. And we need you men to stand up and say so. We all are gathered here in this room to say just that. And I am so eternally grateful to be exposed to so many of you, especially the men's group, who before I got into this work, I didn't even know you existed. I'm in deep gratitude for your efforts. I truly am. And I want to thank you and encourage you to continue. I am depending on you. I am. And I'm asking that you do even more to enlist other men. What did Eve say? Only 10%. Just 10%. Because all of you know better than we, as you may have those little meetings around the urinal, that women's voices are discounted. And so we need you to join our voice in chorus with our own to end the massacres and the trafficking and the assault, abuse, and sexual violence that men perpetrate against us, against themselves, really, when you connect the dots. We need your voice, your engagement to end sexism in all its ugly manifestations. See, I know people can change their thoughts, their minds, their behavior, as a newfound advocate for women's rights and a mother of two amazing little boys. It is of paramount importance to me that love and respect be the guiding light in how men engage with the women in their lives. I envision a world where there is no threat, where it's safe to be a girl, to be a woman, where we all can thrive, where my value is given because all humans deserve it, because we are all born with talents and purpose and potential for our lives and for the opportunity to achieve it in a climate that supports it. So please, I'm asking you, will you do your part? Because I'm gonna do mine. And today I claim my role as an activist in this social justice movement to end men's violence against women. Holla if you with me.
Thank you for joining Prevent Connect Audio. Prevent Connect Audio is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect Audio are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. You can contact us at info@preventconnect.org, or you can learn much more on our website at www.preventconnect.org.